This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. A 65-foot obelisk rises out of the ground in the heart of downtown Asheville. It is the Vance Memorial, and it's a tribute to Zebulon Vance. He was North Carolina's governor during the Civil War and served as a partial-term governor and U.S. senator during Reconstruction. But for many residents, what is missing alongside that memorial is any mention of Vance's racist speeches or the fact that he was a slave owner. As states like Louisiana and South Carolina take steps to remove symbols of the Confederacy from public spaces, some residents in Asheville are questioning why the memorial to Vance still rests proudly in the square. Matt Bush is news director for Blue Ridge Public Radio, and he's been investigating the brewing conversations around this monument and joins us now. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Frank. Good to be here.
Good to have you. For those of us who don't have the pleasure of living in Asheville, tell us again or more about where this memorial sits.
So the Vance Monument is in Pack Square, which is the main area of downtown. It's surrounded by some of the oldest buildings in the city and the newer Buncombe County Courthouse and Asheville City Hall at the far end. So if you're coming in and to Asheville, it's right in the center of downtown. It's sort of where the if Asheville was set up as a plus sign, as I said, it's Pack Square is basically where the two lines cross.
Right there in the middle of things. What do we learn about Zeb Vance if we were to walk up to that monument?
Very little right now. You would just see the name Vance on the monument. Again, it looks like a mini Washington monument, the one we see on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. But there is no likeness of Zebulon Vance on it. You just see the name Vance at the bottom and a small plaque outlining when he lived and died and the offices he held. He was governor and U.S. senator in North Carolina during the Civil War and the post-Reconstruction period.
All right, well, tell us more. Who was he?
So he was one of the, if not the most important politician to come from Western North Carolina, and I think that in some ways was why he was so honored when he died in the 1890s. But grew up, was born in Weaverville, nearby Asheville. His father died when he was very young, went to learn to practice law around the time of the start of the Civil War. He actually, like many Western North Carolinians, did not want the state to join the Confederacy, but after Fort Sumter and the secession of South Carolina beneath North Carolina and Virginia above it, went along into going into the Confederacy. Then he became elected governor during that time, helped raise troops, but he was also a major thorn in President Jefferson Davis's side during the Civil War and grew to quite prominence. Had the South either won or had the war extended all the way to 1867, one of the people I spoke with about this said it's very likely Zebulon Vance would have been the second president of the Confederacy.
Second president, but you say he was a thorn in the side of Confederate leaders. How so?
He raised a lot of troops, but did not feel like many Southern politicians who were not Jefferson Davis at the time. They took the state, they took states' rights very seriously. They did, you know, one of the reasons they had seceded from the United States is they did not want the federal government telling them what to do, essentially. And that became a problem also with the Confederate national government as well. They were trying to do some things similar to what the U.S. federal government was doing, and all these politicians who fought for states' rights, and that was the reason they gave, or one of the reasons they gave, is they for seceding from the Union, they weren't going to follow a Confederate national government either.
As you said, reluctant to join the Confederacy early on, but that's not because he was opposed to slavery. He was himself a slave owner, right?
He was. He owned six slaves at the time of the start of the war. His father had owned more. His father and the family, the business that they owned out in Weaverville, was sort of what they called a drover stand, where people who were passing through could stop and stay at or do other things while they were going through there. So his father owned about 17 slaves when Zebulon Vance was born. At the time of the war, Vance owned six slaves. And author Stephen Nash, who I spoke to for this story, who did a very big book on Reconstruction, but also Western North Carolina's history at the time, said Vance was not particularly introspective on slavery. So people primarily from the generation before him, his father's generation, who saw slavery in their eyes at the time, describing it as a necessary evil. Vance did not see it that way.
And you talked about Stephen Nash, a historian who understood that that Zeb Vance wasn't particularly sympathetic with the condition of African Americans either. Let's listen to this clip from an interview with Stephen Nash, an interview that after you spoke with him.
There's a press report of a speech that he gave in Rutherfordton, and I don't have the full text of the speech, but a description of it. And what it was is he created this sort of fictional black militia captain, supposedly commanding the county militia in Rutherfordton, and of course goes into great exaggerated stereotypical detail of what this figure would look like, and then placed all the leading white Republicans of the county behind this individual, as if they were all taking orders and marching behind this sort of over-the-top stereotypical black man. And of course that was designed to basically shame the white men of Rutherfordton. How could any of you do that?
That's author and historian Stephen Nash speaking about Zebulon Vance, North Carolina's governor during the Civil War, a U.S. senator during Reconstruction. He was speaking with Blue Ridge Public Radio news director Matt Bush. He's my guest right now. So all of this complexity, Western North Carolina, its complex relationship with the Confederacy, his being a slave owner, but then again, a son of Western North Carolina. Not many governors came from that part of the state. So now you have this monument to this complex figure who had made these racist speeches in the middle of Asheville for a long, long time. Talk about the conversations that have been generated recently, Matt.
Well, I think a lot of this comes after we saw the shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, 2 years ago that led to the Confederate flag finally being taken down from the state capitol. And then earlier this year, New Orleans removing statues of Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis and General Beauregard and some other things like that, that, you know, those are very prominent Confederate symbols. Someone like Zebulon Vance outside of Asheville, maybe Western North Carolina, people don't readily know who he is, but was a very important figure in that time. So, you know, is this something we're still going to memorialize, or should we still memorialize these figures the same way that it has been done since the end of the Civil War? And that's really where the conversation's beginning to go here, talking about whether this monument should be removed, should it be renamed, should it just be contextualized with some maybe some interpretive markers around the monument itself explaining who Zebulon Vance was. But there's also this history of Pack Square. Again, it is the main square. It was where the courthouse was before the Civil War. It's the courthouse was located at the time right across from where the Vance Monument is now, and courthouses were where slaves were sold before the Civil War. That's where the auctions held. There's nothing mentioning that outside of one sentence on a very small historic sign that you sort of walk through the whole square and see the history of the square. And that's part of the history just as much as Zebulon Vance is, and not more so, to Pack Square. So there's more of the conversation about are we just going to memorialize certain things in certain ways, and do we continue to interpret these monuments the same way the people who built them did? And this monument was built, finished in 1898.
You talked with Darren Waters, and he's a history professor at UNC Asheville, and he talked about that, whether we should build a larger context around these memorials and just how we should remember.
This was a concerted effort to perpetuate a certain memory into the future, the perpetuation of a memory of power about who was in charge and who was not. So that's what I think that these monuments actually represent.
Darren Waters is a history professor at UNC Asheville. I'm talking with Matt Bush, who is news director at Blue Ridge Public Radio. So what's the form now that these conversations, we know they're happening all over the country, particularly in the South. What's the conversation like in Asheville?
Well, it's really starting from the city's African-American population, which has been dwindling over the decades. But a lot of that, there is no recognition of the African-American history of Asheville, certainly in Pack Square, and maybe throughout a whole lot of the rest of the city, because the city has seen a lot of growth, and some of the areas that were the African-American neighborhoods before this growth happened have certainly become very gentrified, the South Slope and West Asheville, the Broad Street community being two very big examples of that. But if you go into Pack Square, again, there was no real commemoration of this history. And there was a lot of people within the African-American community, including Dwight Mullen, who writes the State of Black Asheville report, saying that really does not, people do not feel connected. African-Americans in this area do not feel connected to the city in the ways that other people do. And one of the reasons for that is that there is no commemoration of their history there. That's beginning to change ever so slightly. Last month, a plaque was installed on the Asheville Municipal Building, which is one of the old buildings that surrounds Pack Square. And the plaque honors the man who helped design the building, ran a construction firm. He was a son of a slave, James Vester Miller. He was a son of a slave, but started his own construction firm after the Civil War and is responsible for designing many of the older buildings that still stand in Asheville today. So there was the more of the conversation is, again, how do we Do we honor only things we feel that are good, or do we feel things that are bad, or what do we honor here? And that's a pretty big conversation, but the conversation's intensifying, I think, again, because of some of the things that happened in Charleston and New Orleans. That's expanding throughout the South of these questions of what do we do with these Confederate monuments.
And it has more than just academic impact, it seems, because if you talk about gentrification and some of the highways that get built and where they get built, if you don't remember the important things that happen in some neighborhoods, they're likely to get removed because the history and the impact and contributions of those people aren't memorialized. Isn't that true
right,
in Asheville?
Yeah. Absolutely. Interstate 26 that comes through Asheville and intersects with I-40, but when Interstate 26 was expanded, it took out a sizable chunk of the Broad Street community, which was an African-American community of Asheville, and they're looking to expand the road again. And the conversation comes to, okay, well, if you're going to take out more of this community, what are you going to do to alleviate that if that's what you're going to do? You're going to build more homes in a different area for people? That's the conversation that's been going on, and there's been a lot of pushback against the I-26 expansion for that reason.
Matt Bush, news director for partner station Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville. Matt, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Next month, UNC Asheville is hosting a conversation on the Vance Memorial. We have that info and links to Matt's reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we're going to talk with a reporter and a lawyer about the challenges families face in seeking asylum in the U.S., particularly at the immigration court in Charlotte. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.